Peter Moore, hi.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm astounded.
You're right, lad.
The biog is incredible. Yeah. It reads like, well, it's a movie. It's a movie. As you know, with a keynote speech, you are given time, allotted time. So, potted, how the hell did you go from Liverpool to where you are now?
I've been very fortunate. As I say, born in Sefton General Hospital. My mum was a nurse in Alderhay. My dad was a docker. We moved to Garston. My dad had the Gay Cavalier pub in Speke Road Gardens, the Garston tenements. But he had the foresight to try and make a better life for us and moved us out of Liverpool into a pub between Wrexham and Chester. And that was kind of a platform for all of us to be able to look for a better life during some tough days in Liverpool. We're Scousers born and bred, but we needed to maybe get away and do something different. I was fortunate to be a decent footballer and parlayed that into being a PE teacher, parlayed that into going to America to kick a ball around during the 70s. One snowy day in Llangollen, where I was a PE teacher, I got a call from my college professor and said, how'd you like to come and run my soccer school in Long Beach, California? Said, looked outside with the snow coming in sideways on the Welsh mountains. I'd already been to America for about three summers and enjoyed that environment and also felt that I had a chance there, that there was an optimistic point of view that Americans had, that during that period, and it's changed in Britain, but during that period, we didn't share in Britain, and took the plunge, cashed in my superannuation, which was, I think, was my pension. Remember, I had £2,000, grabbed my girlfriend, now my wife of 35 years, jumped on a plane, one-way ticket, and went to California. Had a tough couple of years, was forced to not that I wanted to, but to stay in university and do my master's degree to stay legal in the country. But by sheer coincidence, my grandparents left Liverpool during the 20s, during the Depression, and went and worked in Boston. My mum was born in Boston and had, as a result of that, a U.S. birth certificate. And that allowed me to basically get what's known as a green card, become a resident alien. Very fortunate then to actually work my way through and get a real job selling football boots, selling soccer shoes in California. One thing led to another, became president of the company. It was called Patrick. Kevin Keegan wore Patrick boots, and I ended up being president of Patrick USA. Was spotted by Reebok. They wanted to get into the global footwear business and recruited me and ended up being senior vice president of global marketing for Reebok in Boston. Then at 45 years of age, I had a complete career change and very fortunate decision to get into video games. And a company called Sega came a-calling and said, we're about to launch a console. We'd like you to be the head of marketing. Went back to the West Coast of San Francisco. Quickly was promoted to the president and chief operating officer. Launched the Sega Dreamcast, which many of the listeners will remember. It was a great console, but couldn't quite get it done. Was then spotted by Microsoft. They had a box called the Xbox that needed a leader and were about to launch a new one in 2006 and moved my family up to Seattle and had a very, very successful 5 years launching the Xbox 360 and then was contacted by EA. They needed a president of EA Sports and FIFA and Madden NFL football and a massively successful company, multi-billion dollar company. And my combination, Pete, of sports and video games was the perfect combination, as well as my marketing skills that I had honed by then. Moved back to the Bay Area, became president of EA Sports. After 4 years, was promoted to chief operating officer of Electronic Arts. And just recently have moved into a role of chief competition officer, which is about esports, which is basically about playing video games competitively for money. And that's the potted version of a very fortunate career and a very fortunate life. And very fortunate that I've got three wonderful children, one of whom was born in Britain because we had no health insurance in those days. The other two are very much California kids who now live in New York City and Los Angeles.
That's a hell of a story.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate.
But you say about being fortunate, but you make your own luck.
Of course.
You graft. Yeah. And that's the one thing. The one thing I don't like about Liverpool, and I love Liverpool with a passion, but I hate the fact that people get jealous of success. Mm. America breeds people that say,
absolutely,
well done,
yeah,
and why not, but you get somebody who's doing really well and all of a sudden they're getting too well and people go, and it's the only, to me, the biggest fault in this city. But,
yeah.
If that's the only fault, we're laughing. Bill Gates.
Yes.
Got to ask about Bill Gates. one of the richest men in the world.
Yes.
What is it like to, because I've not met one of the richest, I've met rich people, but not one of the richest men in the world. Is he protected? Is he guarded? Does he have bodyguards?
Bill is, first of all, one of my favorite people in the world, and our listeners should know, is one of the greatest people of our generation based on what he's achieved, but more importantly, what he's going to do. He's taken his $49 billion. He's gone to Warren Buffett and said, I want your $40 billion. He's gone to Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook and said, I want your 99% of your net worth, which could be $40 billion, because we're going to change the world. And I had the pleasure of working with Bill and spending a lot of time with him. But to your question, no, I lived relatively close, and Bill eschewed close security. I was always worried because I always thought if there was one human being who was a target of American capitalism, it's Bill Gates. And I would travel the world with him. Bill never liked it. Now, was the security always lurking? You bet. And we were always very cautious of making sudden moves towards Bill. I'll tell you a story. I was driving down the road in Seattle one day, and I see Bill and his wife, Melinda, walking down the road. And I thought, I'm going to pull over. I was driving a convertible car. I'm going to pull over and say hi to Bill. I suddenly realized I shouldn't do that because I'm sure there were snipers somewhere, that was going to take me out. But you would see him in the movies, Pete. You would come down. He would have a drink with us.
And do people recognize him, or is he
I think, and in America more, they said people will give people their distance and celebrity. And whilst you will see, and there's Bill, but particularly if you're in Seattle, you're used to seeing him around. And my daughter went to the same school as his daughter. One of my favorite moments with Bill is sitting on pancake morning breakfast with our 8-year-olds, and we're both on little plastic stools and eating pancakes with plastic knives and forks on a paper plate. And Bill was is a very involved father. And again, when we think about people, not only did they achieve great success, but more importantly, in the world of Bill Gates, intends to change the world with his wealth rather than spend his wealth on himself. That's who he is.
Does he know what he's worth? Has he any idea of the actual size? I know he knows the figures, but can he imagine?
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is worth probably hundreds of billions of dollars now. And thousands of people work on making sure that he takes on big projects. He wants to cure malaria. He wants to make sure that no child in Africa is born with AIDS. He wants, because he has the money and the resources and the intelligence to figure out how to get it done. He also has the charisma to be able to lure other people towards him with their wealth and say to them, look, you can be the richest guy in the cemetery, or you and I can work together to make sure that the legacy we leave is the money we spent to cure big, hairy problems. And that's what Bill does. And I love him for it. He's also one of the most intelligent people I have ever come across in my life.
Are his children just ordinary, not spoiled?
Ordinary kids, go to ordinary schools. Now, do they have security? You bet.
Yeah. They'd have to, wouldn't
yes.
they?
Yes. Yeah. Especially
the world in America right now.
The world we're in anywhere. And you know, people still remember Lindbergh and his children getting kidnapped. Yeah. And that's, I don't know, 80, 90 years ago. But in the times that I would see him with our respective daughters in school in Seattle, he would pop up. He drives an older car. The one thing Bill does is make sure that he's not conspicuous. Same time, you bet, there is security lurking there. But when he's driving in public, I always remembered he drove a 6-7-year-old Lexus. He would pop out of the car and nobody would bother him.
I've got to ask one more question.
Yes, sir.
Does he carry money?
Not that I'm aware of.
The Royal We.
The famous joke is of him and Steve Ballmer arriving at the local burger joint and didn't have $2 between them and had to borrow money. And because Bill's diet in those days was a little iffy. But the Burgermeister, I think it was called. And I'm not sure he does. At the same time, it's not because in any way he's pretentious or arrogant. One of my favorite people in the world.
Good. I've got to mention this because it is, honestly, we could talk for hours because you've got so much about you, which we found out, which is fascinating. But I did stop in my tracks when I saw you with a photograph, or in a photograph, I should say, with a man who I think could change the world and a man who scares the living daylights out of me and an awful lot of people. And I'll just mention the word Trump.
Uh-huh.
Is he a friend or business?
So that photograph you saw, it was an interesting time. So I was running Xbox at the time, and the show The Apprentice, which I think Alan Sugar is here in the UK, was incredibly popular. And Trump was seen a little bit more seriously in those days as a legitimate businessman that could actually carry this concept, which was a great concept of a TV show. We decided to leverage that in a rather cruel way. I was working for Xbox, and we hired some actors that pretended to work for PlayStation. And our goal was to go off and do great things. And Trump's job was to fire the PlayStation guys and hire us. I spent a complete afternoon with him. He's everything that you think he is.
The life in America with all yes. those wonderful things you've got now, you've got, without prying, beautiful homes, and you can look after your children because you've gone through bad times to get to yeah. where it is. Do you ever contemplate coming back?
I come back a lot, and I do contemplate at some point coming back. I have a love for this city. I have a love for my football club here, in which I'm closely associated with, and in fact just have had a private tour of the new stand at Anfield with great pride. And, you know, I live and die for my Liverpool football club, and have done since my dad walked me through the gates of Anfield in December of 1959 to watch Liverpool play Leyton Orient. And just fired the manager, and a gruff Scotsman called Bill Shankly had just been hired, and on to better times during that time. I have a deep love for the city, for its people. My family, my brothers, my sister, my nieces, my nephews all live within 25-minute drive. I have cousins and nieces and nephews that live in Garston and live in Allerton that are very close, as we think about the family of my dad and my mum and everything they achieved in this city and outside of this city. My accent, as you can tell, has changed and has become mid-Atlantic at best and American at worst.
Slightly slipping back into Liverpool every so often.
Every hour that I'm here, that I'll go and spend time here, and I'll start talking like one of the lads again, and it does come back. But yeah, I mean, there's always, for the right situation, you are, and I talked about this today in front of a lot of people about the uniqueness of this city. I think you can grow up in Birmingham, you can grow up in Bradford, you can grow up even in London, and it's not who you are. But if you are born and bred a Scouser, there is a deep, deep root that's within you, no matter where you go in the world, no matter how many years you go. And I'm sat here talking to you and looking at the River Mersey as we look here at in St. John's Tower back at Birkenhead. It never leaves you. You know, my dad's tombstone says you'll never walk alone on it. I may or may not have some ink on my body that is reflective of the live bird. It is deep, deep within me. The further I go away, and actually the longer you're gone, the deeper it becomes for you. You're a Scouser, born and bred.
The amazing thing about the new stand is it's put Anfield on the map, as in you can see Anfield
see it forever
now, from where I live in the world.
Hopefully you can see it from now, Old Trafford.
You can now see it, which is really strange. Yeah. It's a hell of a feat of engineering, isn't it?
As you may know, they're paving the outside of the stand now with granite stones, and just done a stone for my dad, Terry Moore, always a red, you'll never walk alone. And my dad will be forever on that stone right outside of the main stand there. But it is an incredible feat of engineering.
Peter, I always ask Scousers abroad to give advice to people. There are many people, and we've been doing this for a long time, and there are people on the strength of doing this that actually go, I will do it, I will go. My cousin's teaching football in New York, he'll be listening right now. Yeah. People like that, they've done it. What advice would you give to anybody that wants to make a break?
Well, you know, it's funny, I parlayed who I was, and the roots of who I was and who I am is a Liverpoolian. I think we say we have the gift of the gab, but we're a confident group of people. We're comedic. We've been through tough times, so we're stoic. And I parlayed that with a combination of growing up in a pub in Garston, and my dad gave me the opportunity at 12 years of age to work behind the pub, and then being a teacher, and that kind of melting pot potpourri of who I am as a personality. But the roots of who I am is a snotty-nosed Scouser from Scotty Road that knows what tough times are, always appreciates the great times, but parlays a sense of self-confidence, a sense of humour, a sense of personality, a sense of gregariousness, adds education and substance to that, and that's who I am. And Liverpoolians have this benefit over people from not only the UK but anywhere else in the world of who we are. And I go back to the Ken Dodds and the Jimmy Turbucks of this world, and that Scouse sense of irreverency, but with that sense of humility as well, that all comes together. And every day I spend in this city, I see it wherever we go. And you've got to be able to take that. And you've got to look in the mirror and know who you are. And then you've got to figure out what your weaknesses are, whether it's you've got to go to school and get your degree or go get work experience. And then you do what I did, which is looked outside that window one day on a snowy day in Llangollen and said, screw it. I'm going to take the plunge. I'm going to cash in whatever pension I had. And I'm going to get on a one-way ticket to California. And I'm going to make it. And, you know, I find, particularly when I meet people from Liverpool around the world, we've got an advantage over the rest. And that advantage is that unique personality that we have. There's a cockiness in this city when you walk around that I love. It's not arrogance, but it's that little edge that Scousers all have. It's cheeky. Scouser. Yeah. It's cheeky bordering on cockiness with self-confidence, but you only need... You've got to be able to then wrap that around all of the accoutrements of substance and education. You have all of that and you're a Scouser as well. You rule the world.
Let's finish off by, and I could talk to you for hours. This is really annoying me when we're stuck for time. Let's have some name checks. Let's say hello to some of your family.
So my wife, Bernice, my daughter, Tara, who works in New York City and is the director of communications for Under Armour. My son, Tyler, lives in Los Angeles. He is a director of digital sales for IGN, which is a gaming website, and is doing tremendously well. And my daughter, Toni Marie, and she lives in New York City with her big sister. My brother, Phil, who's here with me now, Liverpool policeman. Inspector Philip Moore, if you get stuck and get a ticket, throw his name out there and off you go.
And he's, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, he's shaking his head.
My sister Emma, my other brother Andrew, who live between Wrexham and Chester in a little village called Andrew. My nieces and nephews, great family, and I'm very fortunate to be able to call home here and call home in a beautiful city called San Francisco as well and travel around the world on the basis of what my dad made me, what my mum made me, a Liverpool docker and a nurse at All Day Hospital. And the roots of that still run deep inside of me.
Peter Moore, thank you for talking to me.
Peter Price, thank you for having me.